Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 21st of October. Coming up this Friday at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, a major seminar on religion and the media. The title of the seminar is Combating Islamophobia, and one of the major speakers at this conference will be joining us momentarily, the communications director at the Muslim Public Affairs Council. We'll be welcoming phone calls about how this has been playing in the presidential election. We'll pay special attention, of course, to Senator Colin Powell's, former Secretary of State, Colin Powell's comments about the tying particularly Senator Barack Obama to the Muslim faith in a disparaging way, and his comments, the answer is he's not a Muslim, he's a Christian, he's always been a Christian, but the really right answer is what if he is? Is there something wrong with being a Muslim in this country? We'll have two guests with us. We'll be welcoming phone calls, and I would imagine that we'll get quite a few phone calls during the course of this hour. The number for you to join the conversation is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition, Jana Najib, is joining us to talk a little bit about the conference coming up this Friday. Jana Najib, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah, and also joining us is Adina Lekovich, who's Communications Director for the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Adina Lekovich, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. What a timely thing to have. Can you tell me about the conference, a little bit about it, how people can become involved in it, and what you're covering, and why you found it necessary to cover all this very close to an election, Janet?
Well, I think you basically said it. It's very close to an election, and I think what we have seen is that Islam is being kicked around as a tool to incite fear and to try and sway the election. And I think that the problem is many people really are not familiar with Islam and Muslims and are only privy to the information that's coming to them from some of the political campaigns and some of the more, I think, right-wing media and pundits. And I think it's doing a tremendous disservice both to American voters and, of course, to the American Muslim community.
And so the conference will be looking at religion and the media. How are you going to focus that?
Well, basically, we are going to address what we consider the climate of Islamophobia, and we're going to start with discussing how really how people need to talk about Islam and Muslims. There are so many words that are thrown around and used erroneously and have been given meanings that they really don't have. And so part of it is going to be an educational part, really talking about those words and terminology that is being used to evoke certain emotions and passions and what it really means. And we're also going to talk about how Islam is being used as a political tool and how it's become really in many ways very ugly. And it's created problems to the point that the amount of violence and harassment that has been experienced by the American Muslim community is really at an all-time high, and it's clear that it has not reached this point since directly after September 11th.
How ugly has it become, Adina Lekovich?
Well, I think it all depends on who you ask. I think that for Muslim Americans around the country, those Muslims who live in large metropolitan cities feel, I think, a greater sense of comfort and of security because they live in more racially and religiously diverse communities. But for those Muslims, I think, who live in parts of the country where they may be alone in some ways, or they may be, you know, even more that minority, I think that feeling of isolation contributes to the situation. And you know, and we certainly have found on the national level that the level of complaints of, particularly what's interesting, I think, is that we expect that hate crimes would be taking place that are violent or that are, you know, near violent. In reality now, 7 years after 9/11, the vast majority of discrimination complaints that are coming in to both the Department of Justice and to civil rights organizations have to do with employment discrimination and housing discrimination. It's a far more subtle type of reality and problem that individuals are dealing with, where they feel that they are being either wrongfully terminated or comments are being made that are inappropriate, prejudicial, and just downright offensive. Mm-hmm. And we're also seeing that taking place in the K-12 school system, where sometimes the perpetrator is a well-meaning teacher who we've had at least one case where in Chicago where a teacher used a Muslim student as, you know, as sort of a hypothetical example of a terrorist. He said, look at Ahmed here. If Ahmed were to strap himself, you know, with a bomb and went on with this type of example, it's that kind of climate and that kind of lack of sensitivity that contributes to further misunderstanding, and that's really the danger that we're facing, is negligently contributing to the problem by not being sensitive to the realities that Muslim Americans in this country share the same values and share the same goals as all other Americans, and they care about the same issues in this election. They care about national security and civil rights. They care about the economy. They care about health care. And they care about, you know, what's taking place with our wars. If people took the time, and I think many people are, the more people who take the time to get to know a Muslim or to think hard about these issues, see the reality and see that we owe it to ourselves as a nation to be more even-handed and to be more inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask both of you, and then we'll get some information from you about the conference, how people can register for it, Jan and Najib. But let me ask both of you your reaction to, A, were you surprised when former Secretary of State Colin Powell talked about this issue on Meet the Press, and your response to his comments, well, because so much has been said via emails that are not true, questioning Mr. Obama's patriotism and whether or not he's a Muslim. The correct answer, Colin Powell, he is not a Muslim. He's a Christian. He's always been a Christian. But the really right answer is, what if he is? Is there something wrong with being a Muslim in this country? With the answer is no, that's not America. Is there something wrong with some 17-year-old Muslim American kid believing that he or she could be president? What did you think about when your response to that when you heard him say that, Adina Lukovich?
Honestly, it was a huge relief because it's been on the tongue of so many Muslims that I talk to around the country, and that's been the reality for at least the last year as these accusations have swirled around, and Muslim has become more of a slur in the political communities. I was proud and I was relieved at the same time that somebody of Secretary Powell's stature, who is himself Republican, would come out and say something that is so true and yet so politically courageous in this moment in the election cycle, because it's the reality, and there's nobody who's better placed to point out the simultaneous reality of, so what if he were, you know, and is there a religious test for public office in this country? And simultaneously to point out that really touching story of Kareem Rashad Sultan Khan, who he talked about, and having seen this photo essay in which a mother was grieving at her son's gravestone. And that as you survey the scene, you realize that this was a Muslim soldier who gave his life defending his country, and that is who Muslim Americans are. And that message coming from Colin Powell, it's, you know, frankly, it's priceless. And I think it will be as we look back on this era, I think it'll be a defining moment, because others have said the same thing, including CNN commentator Campbell Brown, including other people. But this is the first time that I think it's having a national resonance, and I think, you know, all of them, you know, the Muslims and the civil rights folks that we work with are just, you know, just feel incredibly, I don't even know if relieved is the right word. I haven't found the right word, frankly, but just, validated.
I think you expressed it quite well. Do you share those sentiments, Jan and Najib?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there was that sense of relief, and there was also the sense that it's about time. What took so long? I think that as we've been watching the elections, and we've been watching individuals at different campaign rallies get up and declare Obama a Muslim or Obama an Arab, there were so many missed opportunities to actually say that, and that's the right thing to say. So I think it was that sense of relief and also that sense that it's about time someone stood up and said the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you give us some details on the conference? How can people just show up for it? Do you recommend registration for this?
Well, people can simply show up. We do encourage registration simply because we're going to we'd like to be able to plan well and have enough packets of information available. But this seminar is going to be taking place at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee UWM Union Theater, which is 2200 East Kenwood Boulevard. And we recommend registration either by phone, which is calling 414-229-5960, or they can register also online at www.cc.uwm.edu. We do encourage them to register. We will have registration from 9 until 9:30. And the seminar will then run from 9:30 until 1 o'clock. And we have one of our speakers is Dina Lekovich, who's very well known nationally. And we also have Anissa Mehdi, who is a professor at Seton Hall University and president of Whetstone Productions. She has done quite a few productions about Muslims and issues in relation to Muslims. And I think it's going to be a very valuable opportunity for people not only to get another perspective, but also to have their questions answered.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Janet, very much for being with us. Adina is staying with us for the hour. We thank Janet Najib, president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition, for joining us to talk about the conference taking place this Friday. Our phone number and our lines are all jammed right now, but no, we have one line open at 800-486-8655. Adina Lekovich is Communications Director for the Muslim Public Affairs Council, and she will be speaking this Friday on Islam as a political tool in the 08 elections, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm Kathleen Dunn. To your calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adina Lekovich is our guest now for the remainder of the hour. She is the Communications Director for the Muslim Public Affairs Council, and she has been acting as a spokesperson to media outlets, government officials, interfaith leaders, academic institutions, appeared on all the major national media outlets, and she has also participated in many national and international conferences and interfaith dialogues, speaking on issues related to American Muslims. She represented this group at a United Nations seminar confronting Islamophobia in 2003, invited by the Malaysian government to be one of two U.S. representatives to the International Conference of Muslim Young Leaders, which served as a precursor to the annual conference of the Organization of Islamic Conferences. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Peggy from Brookfield is our first caller. Adina Lekovich, hello, Peggy.
Hi. Good morning, Kathleen, and to your guests. At the outset, I'd like to say that I've traveled in the Middle East. I like the Middle East. There's a lot I love about it, actually. But I have great concerns that when these dialogues come up, and I'm very interested, by the way, in attending this program that your guests are talking about, there is always a difference. The conversation is about Muslims and Islam, Islamists, and there is a difference in my opinion. The first thing I'd like to say is that we in the West are, okay, or in Europe, as it were, we have Muslim public affairs councils. I don't see the mirror image of that anywhere in the Middle East for Christians or any other faith, and I am none of those. Specifically, I don't have a problem with anybody in any country, whether he's a Muslim, a Christian, a Jew, or anybody else becoming president. But I do have an issue with a group of people who paint themselves as merely Muslim, when in actual fact, when things happen like 9/11 or Theo van Gogh or Danish cartoons or bombings in Madrid or London, the Muslims never come out against that type of activity. Not that I see, anyway. And, you know, good news, I will say, doesn't sell newspapers or TV time. However, that doesn't make me feel very comfortable. I would specifically like to hear from your guests what they think specifically about Sharia law, whether they endorse it or not, what their opinion is about the mantra of Islamists, which says you have three choices as far as being a Muslim is concerned. If you're any other religion, you either convert or you will be killed or you become a dhimmi. It would be great to hear what they think about that. I would like to see religion and government separate in this country, remain that way, and anywhere else in the world where individuals are appreciated above the whole. You know, this conversation is so complex and so large. I have a very open mind, but I don't think there are not enough Muslims, if you will, give them that name, that have anything negative to say about the Islamist mantra.
All right, we've got the point here. Adina Lukovich?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of questions there, a lot of topics to cover. Let me see if I can get through some of those. I agree with with separating out a difference between mainstream Muslims and, as you call them, Islamists. I think that the word Islamist is a little precise or imprecise, but clearly there is this radical fringe that exists, and no one is denying that. I think that I was just at a conference and then a community gathering over the weekend that involved all kinds of my interfaith friends, and somebody made the comment that everybody's got their crazy Uncle Bob in their family. And I think that is a great analogy to what we're dealing with. There is certainly this radical fringe that exists within the global Muslim population. When you're talking about 1.3 billion people around the world, certainly there is a problem, and certainly there is a problem with terrorism and with extremism. But certainly too, there is a response that is being mounted, and mainstream Muslims are day in and day out working to combat extremism and working to prevent extremism and terrorism. And just as you said in your own words, good news rarely gets out, and I can't tell you how frustrating it is. Particularly, I'm somebody who does media work day in, day out, and my great frustration is this. Is that somebody like Osama bin Laden or any other al-Qaeda type terrorist can videotape a message in any cave in any corner of the world and can drop off that videotape or that DVD these days, and that can be aired in living rooms, televisions all around the world repeatedly for free, and it's the greatest kind of marketing and recruitment that we simply can't match. That we moderate mainstream majority Muslims, when we are trying to combat terrorism and trying to get an audience for that, a media audience for that, the response is simply, it's dwarfed. We're lucky if we get a few spots here and there. And I at the same time, let me say, I'm not in the camp of blame the media for everything. I'm certainly not, because I think that I take responsibility for the fact that we have to do more, and that that extremists tend to be more vocal and therefore are more sexy to media to cover. However, there has also been declarations that have been issued by world-recognized Muslim leaders, nearly 200 of them who have signed on to different statements condemning terrorism in all forms, shapes, and sizes that target civilians. And they are by, again, internationally recognized folks, even folks that we as Americans may not like very much, but who have an audience in other parts of the world, people like Yusuf al-Qaradawi, Amr Khalid, and, you know, these names that you may not recognize but that have resonance in the Arab world specifically. Now, onto the other point, I mean, so to underscore that point, the idea is that every day this work is taking place. It's simply not getting enough attention, and we also need more steam, more momentum in order to fight fire with not with fire, but with truth. Secondly, on the question of Sharia law, we oppose the implementation of Sharia law. We support Islam supports the idea of democracy, and so far as people have the right to elected representation and that their leaders should answer to them, not the other way around. And that is a core Islamic concept. What has unfortunately been perverted in the implementation of quote-unquote Sharia law, which just let me also say that there is no such thing as the Sharia, as in, the Constitution has been codified. You know, it exists in the exact same form today that it did hundreds of years ago. The same is not true of the Sharia. The Sharia is composed, just like American law is, of a series of rulings that change and that evolve and that new precedents are set constantly. Unfortunately, in some countries where Sharia law is applied, it has not been revisited, updated, new precedents being set, and Sharia, Islamic law, is supposed to apply to each time and place and geographical setting, in which people live. And so there is a huge problem, and I agree with you that there is a huge problem of dictatorship that exists in the Middle East and in other parts of the world as well. There are so many challenges that exist, but at the same time, there are people on the ground every day who are doing good work and who are pushing for democracy and who are pushing for, representation by people. And I hate to see that go unrecognized. Mm.
Let's talk about the turnout in this particular election. I think it's your organization that has said that you believe there will be a record number of Muslim American voters turning out at the polls.
Absolutely.
This group is considered to be socially conservative. Republican usually, Democratic usually. Why a record number?
Yeah, that's a great couple of questions. Here's the thing: is that Muslims, have traditionally been socially conservative on social values, things like abortion, financial issues, homosexuality, things that would be akin to other religious communities as well. However, at the same time, they are politically liberal in the sense of pushing for civil rights, for government to offer services to people, and so they're. Neither party has an automatic in with Muslim voters, and yet we know from working with communities around the country that there is a higher level of energy that exists among Muslim American voters in the current election than we have ever witnessed before. We are registering people to vote at amazingly high levels. And frankly, the good news is that where we go out to register people to vote, most of them say, I'm already registered. I mean, it's when people ask whether Muslims are integrated in this country, I think that is a huge symbol of how seriously they take their citizenship and their American identity and their American duties and privileges. And so we have been on sort of a nationwide tour doing what we call Rock the Muslim Vote Town Hall Forums, where we bring candidates for local, state, and federal offices to meet directly with Muslim voters and have an opportunity to introduce themselves and answer questions about their platform, about their qualifications, just like they do in other settings. Because, frankly, that's one of the disappointments, I think, of Muslim voters, is that candidates so frequently go to all different types of community settings, including churches and synagogues and Buddhist temples and all kinds of other places, and yet mosques they feel are frequently overlooked. However, in the past, I think that many Muslim, you know, many local Muslim communities just haven't had the capacity or, you know, necessarily the know-how to organize these types of events. So we're really coming in to help facilitate that. And so just in the span of the last month and continuing for the next week or two, we are holding about 25 of these town hall forums where we bridge the gap between the candidates, the issues, and Muslim voters, because getting people registered to vote is only one step of the process. Doing voter education so that they're aware of the issues on the national level and also on their state-level propositions is another piece of the pie. And then finally, working on the mobilization aspect. You're registered to vote. You know the issues. Now you actually have to get out there and make it to the polls. So we are working to see it through, and we expect, you know, there are something like 4 to 6 million American Muslims. Roughly half of those are voting eligible, and we expect a turnout of 80% or
higher. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Among Muslim voters. The size of the American Muslim community mirrors the size of the American Jewish community. So if you know, just to give your listeners a reference point in terms of, you know, the size of this community, you know, quite obviously the impact is in the level of understanding of the culture and of the community is not the same. But we're a relatively new community that's working on being more politically organized, being more civically engaged, and we're seeing that pay off because particularly among young American Muslims, they want to be part of the solution in this country. They want to contribute to a better idea of who they are as Muslims, and also just working on issues that all Americans care about. They're not just concerned about oh poor us Muslims. They want to be part of. Creating and shaping a better day in this country.
Mm-hmm. Adina Lekovich is our guest, Communications Director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, and we go next to Ron from Milwaukee. Hello, Ron. Ron?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
I am struck by the comparisons to the way that the political system is using the Muslim population as scapegoats for our problems, and that extends all the way back to 9/11, and even before then to the invasion of Kuwait. In a similar way, the Nazis used the Jews, and that is to identify a population, make them scapegoats, and focus all the wrongdoing on the evildoers who don't happen to be regular Americans. And I find that comparison really disturbing.
Hmm. Do you see that comparison, Adina?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do.
Really?
You know, I think that President Bush, what's interesting is I think that President Bush set a really positive tone immediately after 9/11. He made an appearance in a mosque in D.C. and, you know, and said very clearly, Islam is not the enemy. Islam is a religion of peace. And we've heard that line countless times in the years since. However, since that, I think, historic moment, the president has also utilized terminology like, that we're fighting a crusade, and that's not a direct quote, mm-hmm. take it for what it's worth, but that we're fighting a crusade, and the launching of wars in Iraq and in Afghanistan, the failure to capture Osama bin Laden and other key al-Qaeda targets, the series of events that we've seen have created a more politically charged environment in this country, and I couldn't agree more with Ron that's the reality. Is that, and it's one that I think that many Muslims recognize is that simply that you know we're simply the latest scapegoat, and it's you know it's part of unfortunately part of our history as a country that in different eras. Different scapegoats are used, and it always starts with, I mean, here's the thing, is that it always starts with a kernel of truth, and then the exaggeration and the distortion take place, and that rarely happens accidentally. There are certainly people out there who seek to fuel that idea of this being a clash of civilizations, which it is not. Seek to fuel that idea that Muslims are inherently different than Americans. They can't make good Americans. Nothing could be further from the truth. Islamic values and American constitutional values complement each other actually quite nicely, even in terms of, which might again surprise your readers, but even in terms of issues like religious freedom and respect for non-Muslims around women's rights and, you know, around freedom of speech, around all of these values. Unfortunately, we've seen a lot of this be perverted by that fringe that we all have to fight, but there is no excuse for ignorance in our country in this day and age when we're so globalized and where we have access to so much information. We must have a higher standard than just allowing ourselves to fall into the trap of believing propaganda that exists out there. And unfortunately, I think it's sometimes been fed into by our public officials. And, you know, most recently, Senator McCain was at a rally where a woman said that she didn't care for Obama and didn't trust him because he was, in big pause, an Arab. Senator McCain did the right thing in stopping her dead in her tracks and saying, no, ma'am. But I was frankly a little disappointed by what he said next. He said, no, ma'am, he's a decent family.
Right. Yeah.
And the message that was sent to Arab Americans around this country, there are about 3 million of them around the country. And mind you, the majority of them are Christian Arabs who felt then that the message was, no, he's not an Arab. He's a decent family man. As if you cannot be an Arab and a decent family person at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
These kinds of messages on a big public stage are particularly troubling for individuals who already feel a little marginalized, already feel a little misunderstood, and frankly, they, it gives people talking points for when they, you know, are standing around the water cooler, which is probably why I'm so proud that Secretary Powell did the opposite in calling out the obvious, because I know that that's now water cooler conversation, and I think that is extremely powerful. Our public officials must set the tone.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Can we talk just a moment? Our caller brought up this reference to Nazis. I didn't look at this film because I wouldn't watch it, but I know that a lot of people recently got, there were 28 million copies of this film Obsession that were dumped into battleground states, which my understanding is attempting to equate Muslims with Nazis in an akin to fascism. Can you tell me about the background of that? Why it is so many newspapers distributed this to so many people? You've got your hands full on dealing with this issue, don't you?
Oh, yeah, we certainly do.
Right.
Frankly, we've got our hands full on a week-to-week basis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so starting the week of the anniversary of 9/11, a group called the Clarion Fund, about which very little is known, it's based in New York, we started to see these DVDs of this movie called Obsession, Radical Islam's War Against the West, that were inserted as advertisements into newspapers, not just around the country, but in battleground states. 28 million copies were inserted in more than 70 newspapers in 12 battleground electoral states. What's particularly curious about the situation is that the website for the Clarion Fund and for the film, for the DVD itself, for a period of about a week, contained an explicit endorsement of Senator McCain. They then pulled it off their website. I would assume they realized that this would compromise their 501c3 nonprofit status, because you're not allowed to endorse candidates when you are a nonprofit organization. But this group have since held viewings of this very very propagandistic DVD all around the country. And frankly, the DVD's been around for a couple of years. But this type of mass distribution, clearly the makers of the film have their right to free speech, and that's not what's on the line here. Just like they have their right to free speech, though, we have our responsibility to respond to mischaracterizations and distortions. The film attempts at its core, to equate Muslims with Nazis in a manner that is akin to fascism. And the way that they do it is using classic propaganda techniques of taking advantage of viewers' emotions, of their ignorance, and of their of their core misunderstandings of this religious minority. And their big disclaimer at the beginning of the film is the vast majority of Muslims are peaceful and law-abiding. This film is not about them. It's about the radical threat. Now, I appreciate the disclaimer. However, the 60 minutes that follow that disclaimer set out to undermine that disclaimer. There are gross generalizations made about Islamic values and Islamic teachings that transcend merely the idea of what radicals are doing. And then the series of so-called experts who are quoted in the or featured in the DVD are equally problematic individuals, people who have been on record as saying horribly racist and intolerant things about Arabs and Muslims, and who, you know, I think if people got the full picture of who they were, would cringe. And certainly they would disregard this DVD as being biased in that way. Frankly, what the DVD does is kind of like what happens when you go to the circus or the fair and you stand in front of one of those funny mirrors. It starts out with a set of facts, which is that radicalism exists, and nobody is denying that reality. But what is reflected back in front of that mirror is, just like you stand there and, you know, what you see in front of that mirror is that you looked really tall and thin or really, you know, short and round. That's what the DVD does. It takes a segment of reality and it distorts it into a global threat that is seeking to overtake civilization. And that's particularly dangerous as a political tool in this election season. And I'm frankly very pleased that the response has been, I think that people see through it. The response that we've seen around the country is people writing to those newspapers and saying, I expect more from my local newspaper.
Why did you put this in my paper? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and people are pushing back. And then on top of that, one of the things that we have done nationally is call on interfaith religious leaders to voice their opinions about this type of propaganda being used to divide Americans, using fear during the elections. And we've had over 120 religious leaders from Jewish, Christian, Buddhist, Muslim, Baha'i, faith backgrounds who have signed on to a national statement opposing this type of tactic at this time in our history. And I think that that's where the real story is that people aren't standing for it, they're seeing through it. And sure, these dangerous things exist out there, but we won't let them define who we are, and we won't let them divide our communities as Americans.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Joe from Madison next. Hi, Joe.
Hello. I don't think it should matter what religion anybody is, when they're running for president. You know, they should just have to meet the requirements in the Constitution. My only problem is when people have their religious beliefs interfere with their political, you know, actions. I'd give one example. I think all four candidates, Joe Biden and Barack Obama and John McCain and Sarah Palin, with their, and I'm conservative, I'm a Republican, but they all are pretty much against gay marriage, and I just see it as a civil rights issue. So I think they're letting their beliefs that are based in their religion interfere with just, a view that this is just a legal issue. It's not a moral or religious issue.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to respond to that?
I don't necessarily think that a response is necessary, but
okay.
I think that the undertone there is that religion has become such a factor in our election cycles in a way that, frankly, makes me a little uncomfortable as an American, in the sense that since when do we judge our political candidates by their faith and not by their policies and by their policy directions? Sure, we need to look at how candidates, their decisions are informed. But we need to look deeply, based on their track record, based on how they have served in the past, and simply not limit it to their religious background. We've seen some historic things happen in this election, You know, it's the first time that a member of the Mormon faith has run for the presidential office. The second time that a woman is being considered for vice president. The first time that we've had a female, a woman running for president. First time for an African American being, you know, a serious contender as a presidential candidate. There are so many firsts here that I think that we frequently we miss the point when we just cloak everything in religion. And it's, you know, I think just as much as that is a problem, you know, in for the Christian right, I think it's also a problem in the Muslim, you know, in the Muslim community. To be self-critical, I think that there are certainly Muslim American voters who are out there who are saying, how can I maintain, you know, which candidate most closely follows my own set of beliefs and who are voting along those lines. And that is one of the things that we're going out there, when I talked about voter education, that's one of the things that we're going out there and really trying to, you know, change the minds on that and get people to think in terms of where do the candidates stand on issues that I care about,
mm-hmm.
rather than simply I always tell people, if you don't want people to, you know, the thing about the double standard here that you're applying, if you don't want people judging you based on being a Muslim and how you make decisions based on your Muslim faith, why would you then turn around and judge, you know, our political candidates or anybody else for that matter using that same flawed measuring stick? And I think that, you know, that we don't always do the best job of being consistent in terms of treating others the ways that we wish we would be treated.
Do you think that part of the problem here is that there's only one Muslim member of Congress? There are two now.
Yeah, there's Representative Andre Carson in Indiana, who I don't know if I'm using the right term, but inherited his grandmother's seat and who's now running to for re-election to hold on to that seat.
Huh. It still is very few. Is part of the problem that we don't, just as John Kennedy had to say that he was a Democrat first and then a Catholic, because people were worried about the Pope running the country, for heaven's mm-hmm. sake, that we need more people of the Muslim faith to be front and center and perhaps elected, as we do people of the Mormon faith, as we do people we don't understand too much about their religion, for
Absolutely.
It to become more mainstream?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that there's a unique, exciting and terrible burden of being the first.
Mm-hmm.
Congressman Keith Ellison from Minnesota was the first Muslim elected to Congress just a couple of years ago. And I think the fact that can happen you know, 4 or 5 years after 9/11 is a testament to who we are as a country. And I think that speaks a lot about our national character, because I don't know where else that could happen, you know, that quote-unquote Muslims could attack our country, and then a few years later, the first Muslim could be elected to Congress, and just a couple of years later, that the second Muslim could be elected to Congress. I absolutely think that the more that Muslim Americans are involved in the political scene, the more that misunderstandings and mischaracterizations fade, that, you know, we've seen that throughout history. We've seen, you know, being politically enfranchised, how far being politically enfranchised goes. And, you know, what's great, too, is that, you know, just like we were talking about the untold story of mainstream Muslims fighting extremism and terrorism at every turn, every single day, there are Muslims who are working for members of Congress. There are at least 40 or 50 of them who are working for members of Congress on Capitol Hill and in home offices. There are at least five state-level or members of state senates or state assemblies, you know, whatever they're called in different states, all around the country. And there are, you know, and there are Muslims, again, of various racial backgrounds and even, you know, degrees of religiosity or not. But they're on city councils, they're on school boards. But that story just doesn't get out there. But I think that those are everyday people who are working to serve their communities. And the more that happens, the better off we are as a country, because then our elected leaders become more representative of our population as Americans. I just heard the statistic last night that only 17% of all members of Congress are women, and yet more than 50% of the American population is made up of women. And just like we need to close that gap so that our Congress, that the Capitol reflects the rest of the country, so too do we need to close the gap in terms of representation that is racially, religiously, and politically diverse, so that it also reflects different segments of the country. What's happening with the Muslim community isn't unique, and that's frankly the bottom line that I want to leave your listeners with, is that this is an American story. It's an this particular part of the story, the one that I resonate, one that I'm close to, is that my parents were immigrants. My parents came to this country from what was then Yugoslavia, seeking a better life, and seeking the freedom of religion that they didn't have, in their country, which was communist, and seeking economic opportunity for their children, educational opportunity for their children that they could not give them in their country. And I think that promise is still true here in the United States, and that we can't lose sight of that. And that's why it's precisely for that reason that we expect and that we know that Muslim voters are turning out in such large numbers.
Mm-hmm. Let's pause for a moment. We need to, and we'll return and take a few more phone calls. Our guest is the Communications Director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, Adina Lekovic. She will be one of the keynote speakers at a seminar on religion and the media at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee this Friday, Combating Islamophobia. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we have time for maybe one or two more phone calls. Let's go to Alice from Janesville next. Hi, Alice. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you. I just would like to know if there is a website that I could direct people to regarding the Muslim faith. People seem to feel they equate being a Muslim with terrorist, and not so. Muslim is a faith, like my Greek Catholicism is, and so on and so forth. And I think if public were more informed, like your guest is doing, they would accept this. They would not immediately jump into the fear factor. So I was just wondering if
okay.
there was some good websites.
I'm sure.
Out
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, there's a couple of them that I would point you to. The first is called discoverislam.com. I think that it covers a lot of basic teachings of the Muslim faith. It's funny to me how often I still get the question whether Muslims worship the same God as Christians and Jews. And the answer is yes, that the word Allah is just the Arabic word for God, much as in Spanish, the word for God is Dios. Christian Arabs call God Allah. It's the same thing. And just that, I think that we have to start with the basics in some cases. I would also urge you to look at the website of the mosque there in Milwaukee, because they've done a tremendous job of doing outreach, and I know that they frequently have what they call sort of an open house kind of event where they bring guests in. I think that, I talk to a lot of people who say, well, I've never been to a mosque. I'm a little nervous about going in there. I'm not sure, I'm not sure what takes place inside.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that just having that exposure and having that experience, it goes a long way in terms of just opening our perspective. I'd also invite you to check out our website, which is MPAC.org. It stands for the Muslim Public Affairs Council. And there you'll find, under publications, you'll find a book that I think is very important that's called In Pursuit of Justice, that looks at Islam's teachings, mainstream teachings, about core ideas like women, like constitutionalism, like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, democracy, all of the treatment of non-Muslims, all of these core issues that so many people have questions about. And it's a really good resource. It's written in a really user-friendly way. And so I think that could potentially be a very good tool as well.
And thanks very much for your call. It should be a very good seminar this Friday, don't you think? Do you do these all over the country, Adina?
Well, in one shape or another, yeah. I get asked to speak in different places around the country. And, honestly, it's my favorite thing that I do.
Is it?
Absolutely. Because, when we are sitting in a nonprofit doing media relations, sometimes I feel like I want to smack my head against the wall, quite honestly. But going out and talking to people who are grappling with these issues on a day-to-day basis is extremely powerful. And honestly, it's the thing that keeps me hopeful about where we're moving as a country, because I interact with more people who who, you know, who know Muslims, who want to know more, who are really disturbed by the ways that they see religion being used as a tool in this election, and who, you know, who get it, you know. And I think that that makes me very hopeful, no matter what part of the country that I'm in. And I think they far outnumber those, you know, the voices of the extremists, the secular extremists, if you will, who want to push this language around Islamism and Islamofascism, and, you know, to think that there's, you know, there's no such thing as a moderate Muslim, and, you know, all of these radical views that we see, particularly on right wing blogs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't think that they're necessarily representative of the reality. So I always feel lucky to get these opportunities. And I was in Milwaukee last year for a similar event, and I'm happy to be coming back.
Great. Thanks, Adina, so much for being with us. Adina Lekovich, Communications Director with the Muslim Public Affairs Council, and she will be one of the keynote speakers at this seminar, Combating Islamophobia, a seminar on religion and the media. It takes place at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and the UWM Union Theater this Friday, and it runs from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. The purpose is to present accurate information to help diminish negative perceptions, to address stereotypes, and create a greater sense of community through education and dialogue. And you can register a couple ways, either by phone. That number is 414-229-5960, 414-229-5690, or they also have online registration, and that's www.cc.uwm.edu, www.cc.uwm.edu. So you can register for this most interesting conference. Tomorrow, we will be talking about what's happened in a fight against terrorism since 9/11. And we will, the first hour of our program, be looking at healthcare with an emphasis on Medicare and Medicaid. Are those programs in trouble? Will the next president of the country have to deal with those issues? So all of that is coming up tomorrow on our program from 9 to 11. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the show, and thanks to John Treader for on-air production. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.